Welcome to the WR Immigration Podcast. Thanks for listening.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to our February Chatting with Charlie. My name is Joe Barnett. I'm a partner at WR Immigration, and I have the honor of speaking with Charlie Oppenheim today about the EB-5 investor visa. Let's get started. So, thank you so much for showing today. My name is Joe Barnett. I'm a partner at WR Immigration in our LA office. I have to say that this whole presentation does not constitute legal advice. It's just for information purposes only. Please reach out for a consultation with one of our attorneys if you have any questions about what's being discussed today. And I am very honored to be joined by Charlie Oppenheim, our director of Visa Consulting. And Charlie, why don't you give just a brief introduction about you and your history with the State Department? And so welcome very much. Very happy to have you here.
Oh, thank you. It's a pleasure to be able to be presenting today. I was employed with the U.S. Department of State for over 43 years. And for my last 23 years of service, I was chief of the Immigrant Visa Control and Reporting Division. I was responsible for the numerical control process, the publication of the visa bulletin, the movement. I made the decisions in terms of the annual limits and the movement of the final action dates, and the decisions I made allowed over 9 million applicants to receive immigrant visas over those years.
Well, it's very exciting to have you here, in particular because we're going to be discussing the March 2023 Visa Bulletin and the Department of State annual report and some of the information that has been presented there and some information which has yet to be presented, which is a little rare. But it's this Charlie's expertise here is obviously second to none. No one has the knowledge of how the State Department works and organizes and comes up with their calculations, and that is all part of the visa bulletin process. So it's really wonderful for you to be here, Charlie. For everyone here, this is just a brief overview of what we're going to be talking about. But like I mentioned, we're going to be discussing the visa bulletin. We're going to be getting predictions for this fiscal year, and then we're going to be talking about the information that we have gleaned from the most recent State Department annual report. EB-5, as I always say, is a job creation program with an immigration benefit. And you don't get the full immigration benefit unless you create the jobs. And your funds and investors' funds must be at risk with a chance for gain and a possibility for loss. And you invest in a U.S. company. That minimum investment amount is $1,050,000, but it can be lowered if you invest in a rural area, a high unemployment area, or in an infrastructure project. And there's also added benefits under the new EB-5 law with regards to investments in these areas. Not only do you qualify for the lower investment amount, but you can also qualify for a reserve visa, and that's what we're going to be talking a lot about during this presentation. One of the biggest aspects of EB-5 is documenting how you earned and transferred the funds to the EB-5 project, and that's what you work with an immigration attorney on. We have a lot of experience doing this. We've filed over 3,500 of these cases. We file new I-526Es every week, regional center cases, direct cases, and that's the first step in the EB-5 process. And in that initial application, you have to demonstrate that, you know, the company that you have invested into has either already created the jobs or there's a business plan showing that it will be creating jobs for qualifying employees in the future. And with the new Reform and Integrity Act, there's a little bit of difference with regards to a regional center is required to file a project approval application first, and then the investors who invest in that project file afterwards. But that project approval application doesn't need to be approved. It just needs to be filed. And so that's what we're starting to see in terms of direct or standalone EB-5 versus regional center EB-5. I would say about over 90% of immigrant investors choose to do a regional center project as opposed to a direct or standalone. And the big difference between those options is how you count the job creation. For direct or standalone, you have to have W-2 employees on payroll. Whereas with a regional center, you can count jobs through economic modeling, you know, construction expenditures, operational revenue, and it's a little bit easier to get the job count that way. You know, we've also seen a big increase in individuals who are already in the United States, like on an E2 or an L1, and they're now trying to determine how can I move forward with the green card process with EB-5. And we have had success of doing adjustments of status for folks who are in the U.S. on a short-term visa and then using EB-5 to get their green card, either through that existing business or through potentially a regional center investment. You know, in terms of who can benefit from EB-5, it's a huge, huge possibility for a lot of people. But like I mentioned earlier, a lot of international students on F-1s or maybe they're on an H-1B now. And they're looking at backlogs. Maybe they aren't able to find a job. Maybe they found a job, but the wait time is too long. And as we're going to discuss with this new concurrent adjustment of status provision, it really does open up a huge benefit and gateway to get a green card quicker through EB-5. And so, you know, we've had folks who've been gifted money from parents. Sources of funds can come from multiple places, and it's really about just documenting them and making sure that the donor or the giftor is providing evidence of how they earn that money that they have been gifting. So again, there's a lot of opportunities here. I ask that you please reach out if you have any questions about it. We'd be happy to do a no-cost consultation with you to figure out how we can help with your EB-5 case. Okay, so that was a lot of introduction. We're going to get to the meat of the program here. This is an excerpt of Chart A, the final action date from the March 2023 Visa Bulletin. And I have a series of questions I'm going to ask Charlie, and I think they're going to get a bit more complicated as we go in. But before I do that, the big thing that I wanted to mention first is that if you look at that first column, you can see there are four EB-5 visa categories. The first is called unreserved. Now, that includes any investor who filed a case, whether it is a direct standalone case or a regional center case, before the enactment of the EB-5 Reform and Integrity Act. Then beneath that, there are the three set-asides, set-aside visa categories, rural, high unemployment, and infrastructure. And you can see for those that those are all current right now. And that opens up a huge possibility to file the adjustment of status. And we're going to get to that in the next slide. But first, Charlie, we have on this first row for fifth unreserved, we have two final action dates, July 8th, 2015 for China mainland born and June 1st, 2018 for Indian nationals. My first question to you is, what changed in the March 2023 visa bulletin from the February 2023 visa bulletin? What was the big change?
The big change is with the India fifth unreserved date. This date retrogressed from November 8th of 2019 to this new June 1st of 2018 date. This is something that I had predicted would happen when speaking at a EB-5 conference in Miami in early January, as well as I believe in our last webinar on EB-5 after the February bulletin was published. The reason for this retrogression is evidently the amount of demand being received with priority dates earlier than that originally established November 8th date was higher, much higher than the State Department had anticipated in their consultations with USCIS So they were left with no choice but to retrogress the date in an effort to hold overall number use for India within the fiscal 2023 annual limit for unreserved numbers.
And is that based on the number of, you know, that demand? What is that? What is it that the Department of State and USCIS were looking at when they retrogressed it? Was it the number of adjustment filings
It would be a combination of the amount of numbers being used at overseas posts and adjustment of status requests for numbers coming in, plus the projections of what they anticipated happening in the coming months, so that they did decide that they could not allow the initial date that was established to remain, and they had to, quote, shut off some of the demand coming in by retrogressing the date. The one positive thing that for future movement of this date is they can now wait and see if their retrogression has achieved the desired results. And then it is possible that later in the fiscal year, they may be able to advance the date once again and recover some of that retrogression ground if demand has declined sufficiently.
And when you say achieve the desirable result, it's that the Immigration and Nationality Act sets that annual limit of visas that can be issued and or visa numbers that can be used. And what you're saying is by moving the date back, the goal would be to reduce the demand for those visas during this fiscal year. Is that right?
Correct. The annual per country limit for unreserved visas is approximately 666 numbers. So what the State Department would do is have a desired amount of those that would be issued or used on a monthly basis, either for overseas issuance or adjustment of status cases. And evidently the amount of numbers that have been requested October through January was in excess of the amount that they wanted to be used during that time period.
Okay, so you just mentioned the annual limit for India, the number, and that gets to the per country quota. And one question that we get very often is, how does the per country quota apply to the set aside visa categories?
The per country limit, which is 7% of the overall respective limits, would apply to both the unreserved and the reserved categories. So each of the new set-asides would potentially be have a 7% limit applied to them.
Okay. Yeah, that's something that's really important. Now, that also means, though, that just like any other visa category, if there are leftover visas or unused visas, then how, you know, in that category, how are those allocated? Is that based on per country, or is that based on something else?
No, what they would do, the State Department would look at the overall annual limit for each of the respective categories. And if at some point during the year they determine that there are going to be, quote, otherwise unused numbers under the annual limit, then those numbers can be provided to countries that have already reached their per country limit without regard to the foreign state. And that is a tremendous benefit to countries such as China and potentially India that are oversubscribed. And I think that this use of unused numbers will allow the China unreserved date to eventually reach January 1st, 2016, by the end of September.
Okay, you just totally jumped the gun and missed my question. I was going to ask, what's your prediction on the movement for the Chinese EB-5 cutoff date? And you said you believe it's going to move to January of 2016.
Yes, I apologize for that. Yes, I do think that it will, that the China unreserved date will reach January 1st of 2016 by September.
And do you, and that is what is indicated in the application filing date, the chart B in this March 2023 visa bulletin?
Correct.
And do you foresee that application filing date for China mainland born to retrogress at all in fiscal year 2023?
I don't believe so, because that date has been established for a considerable amount of time. And so I think that it's safe. And I think that viewers will want to watch that date and see if by any chance the State Department decides to advance it, because that date is typically where the State Department expects the final action date to be, in roughly 8 to 12 months.
Got it. And, you know, for the China unreserved EB-5, why hasn't that moved forward yet?
There is a very large amount of China demand that was filed in 2015 that is still being processed. The USCIS office, which is responsible for the approval of the petitions to accord EB-5 status, they are still processing a lot of the older Chinese cases that are coming through. And again, there is so much demand for China unreserved numbers, and that therefore it has limited movement. Plus, during the COVID times, processing at Guangzhou, where the vast majority of EB-5 cases had been processed in the past, processing was somewhat limited, especially during the latter part of fiscal 2020 and throughout 2021.
Okay, good. That makes sense to me. And it's really a numbers game, right? I mean, when the demand is significantly greater than the supply, the final action date moves more slowly, right? I mean, is that sort of a fair concept?
Correct. If people think of this, the numerical control process is similar to your household budget. You know you have an annual income. You figure out what your expenses are going to be for the next 12 months, and then you adjust that budget on a monthly basis. Sometimes your monthly budget is higher or lower than what you anticipated, and therefore you may have to make adjustments down the line.
Got it. Okay. Thank you. That was very helpful. Please, if you guys do have questions, feel free to put them in the chat. We are going to move on from the visa bulletin, but if you have questions, we can always move back to it. One of the biggest benefits of the Reform and Integrity Act for EB-5 is that you're now allowed to do concurrent filing of adjustment, and that allows you to file an adjustment of status and at the same time an employment authorization document or advance parole at the same time that you file your EB-5 case. Or if you have a pending I-526, you could file it now as well. And that is only available for those who are inside of the United States who are lawfully admitted. And if you're outside of the United States, you have to wait for your I-526 to be approved before you're able to move towards the next step in the process, which is consular processing and putting the immigrant visa into your passport. But for those who are in the United States, in particular on a student visa or an H-1B, you know, this concurrent adjustment provision is really big. And so, you know, Charlie, you know, about, I think like the statistics show that around 80% in the past of EB-5 visa number use came from consulates abroad. How will that change with this new provision and this new sort of authorization to do the adjustment?
This, as you stated, the vast majority of numbers were processed overseas in the past. I think that this new concurrent filing provides a very unique opportunity for applicants that has not been available to most applicants, or particularly the Chinese applicants in the past. And therefore, this is very beneficial to EB-5 applicants who are filing under either the new reserved categories or potentially first-time applicants filing in the unreserved.
Right. And so part of the considerations of, well, okay, can I file an adjustment of status is you need to have your priority date, which is the date that you file your I-526, be current or not subject to a final action date. And as we see in this March 2023 visa bulletin, for all of those set aside visa categories, they are current. And my question to you, Charlie, is how long do you think that will last?
I think that all three of these set aside categories, the rural, the high unemployment, and most likely the infrastructure, will remain current throughout fiscal 2023 and probably well into the second half of fiscal 2024 as well. I would not expect any type of set aside final action dates probably until the summer of 2024, if then.
And why are you saying that?
The reason is it takes from the time an application is filed until it is approved, then it moves forward either for processing it an overseas post or adjustment of status. It's typically a very lengthy process, particularly getting the approval. So I do not believe that there will be significant amounts of reserved petitions approved, resulting in number use until the second half of fiscal 2024. Therefore, there will be more than enough numbers available to applicants who do receive approved petitions, and it will allow these categories to remain current.
So pretty much the State Department, which creates the visa bulletin, can only understand if there's demand for these visas once USCIS provides that information or a case is transferred over. And because EB-5 processing times are what they are, it's unlikely that the Department of State will have visibility on that demand until, what you're saying, at least through the end of this fiscal year and into fiscal year 2024.
Correct. They will look at the annual limit for both 2023 and 2024, compare number use, which has already occurred using numbers in the categories, and their projections of upcoming number use within the coming months. And again, I do not believe that the number use and expected number use will exceed the annual limits in the set aside categories until well into the second half of fiscal 2024.
Good, good. Okay, so for those who are thinking about doing EB-5 and are in the United States, you know, you can take what Charlie said and have a little bit more, a lot more relief that, hey, you know what, if I do file an EB-5 case in 2023, we'll likely, if not absolutely, have the ability to do an adjustment of status application at the same time. And that's huge. And because you can get the EAD, you can get the advanced parole within a few months, and you're sort of getting the benefit of the EB-5 application, the right to be here and to work here without it even being approved. All right, so now we're going to go into this fun table that Charlie and I worked on together. And we're going to take a deep dive into the numbers, in particular, the visa set-asides and the provisions of the Reform and Integrity Act. What the Act did was carve out 32% of each fiscal year's annual limit towards these reserve categories. 20% for rural, 10% for high unemployment area, and 2% for infrastructure. And the RIA says that if those visas are not used during that fiscal year, they can be carried over for use in the next fiscal year. The RIA also says that if they're not going to be used in that next fiscal year, then they can be made available for use in the unreserved visa category as well. And so Charlie, if you don't mind, let's just start from the top here. Maybe you can explain, we say the EB visa limit for the year. Can you explain why it is significantly less in fiscal year 2023 than fiscal year 2022?
Sure. The annual limit in fiscal 2022 was at an all-time high for employment categories, resulting in the all-time high for EB-5. Number use is down. It went from 281,507 last fiscal year. It has dropped to an estimated 197,000 being available this year. And the EB-5 category is entitled to 7.1% of the overall annual limit.
Right. And so that's where that 19,987 number comes from in the 2022 column, and where the 13,987 come for the 2023 column. Generally, it's 140,000 plus any of the unused family-based numbers from the previous year. And as you can see in this estimate here, we have in fiscal year 2024, it's going to be reduced even further down to 150K. And Charlie, correct me if I'm wrong, it's because there's going to be less unused family-based numbers in fiscal year 2023.
Correct. During fiscal 2020 and 2021, the overseas processing of family cases was severely impacted by the COVID-19 impact on our overseas process, or the State Department's overseas processing. So there were a large amount of unused family numbers. By 2024, it is estimated that overseas processing of family cases will be essentially back to normal. So there will be very little carryover of unused numbers to be added to the employment limit.
So let's get into the reserve visa categories, because I find this to be very fascinating, and I haven't seen anybody put out a chart yet like this, which really gets into the numbers. But 20% of that 19,987 is the 3,997, and that's in that second column. And the 10% is the 2,000, and the 2% is the 400. And the Department of State, in their 2022 visa report, it's very clear that they have separated these visa categories out. And in their report, they say that zero of these visas were issued in fiscal year 2022. So that's an additional 6,396 EB-5 visa numbers that were rolled over from fiscal year 2022 for use in fiscal year 2023. And that's what we have put in these second lines, where it says plus carryover unused reserve. You can see that the numbers match up. Now, every year there's a new reserve. And so when you break down last year's carryover with the new, that's where we get the total reserve number, the total high unemployment area number, and the total infrastructure number. Now, Charlie, based on you being sort of responsible for determining final action dates, how would you administer the use of this year's reserved number annual limits?
What I would do is I would initially use any of the fiscal 2022 carryover numbers that were not used. And the reason being, numbers can only be carried over to the next fiscal year. If they're not used then they, in those respective categories, they cannot be carried over a second time. So I'd start using those numbers initially. And as your example shows, there is 6,396 numbers were carried over to the respective 2023 limits. And in your unreserved overall limit example of, it indicates that the carryover numbers could result, those 6,396 could be added to the unreserved, or excuse me, to the reserved limit for the coming year.
Right. And now, again, those visa, the use of those visa numbers is based on demand, and that in turn is based on USCIS processing times. And so let's just say that we don't have, and I haven't heard of any I-526Es being approved in, you know, since the with a new filing in one of these reserve categories. What would you do if, you know, if you were still at the Department of State for the use of these carryover numbers?
What I would do, as soon as I determined the amount of the reserve numbers that were not going to be used, any of the 6,396, I would begin allowing them to be used in the unreserved category. So I would add any of those numbers to be added to the limit. So for example, this year's limit could be increased for unreserved up to approximately 20,000 numbers, because I do not expect many of the 6,396 numbers to be used for the carryover. Therefore, they would be added to the this year's 9511 limit for unreserved.
Right. And so to make it a little bit, in short, I should say, because there isn't demand for the reserve visa numbers likely in 2023, fiscal year 2023, there is the ability by the Department of State to use those carryovers towards the unreserved visa use. And that's that 15,907, which, as we're going to talk about in the next couple slides, that could make a big chunk out of the visa backlog, in particular for Chinese nationals who've been waiting a long time. Would you agree with that, Charlie?
Yes, I would, 100%.
Okay. And what? Let's just say we have some rural approvals, okay, in 2023, and there could be some visa demand for there. How would you allocate? And maybe you've already answered this question a bit, but how would that impact how you'd be making those allocations?
Again, those numbers, if there were a few of the rural numbers that were going to be used this fiscal year, I would use the carryover from last year's numbers. So use those first, leaving this year's limit is 2,797 is this year's annual limit. I don't want to touch those numbers unless absolutely necessary, because all of those unused numbers could then be added to the 2024 annual limit. So that is a very, it's a nice benefit of this new bill, is the carryover of unused numbers from one year to the next.
Absolutely. I mean, it is a big benefit. But if we, there's also the possibility, though, that if the State Department doesn't apply those to the unreserved category, that there could be wasted visas here, right? And so that's kind of what we're hoping to, you know, avoid, you know, to make sure that the total, the most amount of visas that can be issued in a fiscal year actually are.
Correct. The State Department's goal with the numerical limits is to maximize number use. So that, and that's why I said they should try to make an estimate of how many of the fiscal 2022 carryover numbers are estimated to be needed for number use this year. And once they determine that there will be a sizable amount that will not be used, then they should immediately start providing those to the unreserved limits for the various countries. And they need to do so as early as possible so that there will be the maximum amount of time for processing, either at consulates and embassies overseas or in the U.S. by U.S. Immigration Service. Again, they want to start making that determination as early as possible to have the maximum amount of processing time.
Well, let's talk about what actually happened in fiscal year 2022. And that's what we have gleaned from this annual report. And like we mentioned, none of those 6,396 reserved visas were used in fiscal year 2022. One thing that's very interesting is that if you subtract that 6,396 from the EB-5 annual limit, you have almost 13,600. And just over 50% of those unreserved visa numbers were used in fiscal year 2022. That's at least based on my reading of the Department of State annual report. And it leaves over 6,700 EB-5 visa numbers to be used for adjustment of status applicants or to potentially fall up for EB-1 use and fall down for EB-2 and EB-3. Interestingly, in the annual report, there is a Table 5, which still has not yet been published. And Table 5 is what is sort of the overall number use. It's not just what is happening abroad at consular posts. It also includes data from USCIS for adjustment of status. And we just haven't seen that yet. Charlie, what are your thoughts on that? I mean, you would think that the Department of State has this information from USCIS. When did they get that information? And why do you think it may be taking a little bit longer for the State Department to publish that Table 5?
The State Department has had all of the required information to update the Table 5 chart. They've updated most of the other immigrant and non-immigrant charts. I would expect that Table 5, which will show the overall number use both overseas and for adjustment of status, I would expect that within the next month. From my time there, it is a very labor-intensive manual process to prepare that data, and I think that's the main reason why it has not been posted yet. But the data is already available to them and has been since probably sometime in late October.
And now this slide here sort of talks about what we have and what we don't have. Table 5, you can see the fiscal year 2022 column is blank, whereas Table 6, which relates only to consular processing, is complete. And there's a couple of takeaways from here that I wanted to share, and I'm sure you all will be able to look at this and to come up with your own conclusions. But the big thing that I see here in fiscal year 2022 for overseas for China was over 4,000 EB-5 numbers. And compare that to the past few years in 2021, all the way down to 2018. I mean, they almost processed as many EB-5 visas abroad in Guangzhou in fiscal year 2022 as they did in fiscal year 2018. And I think that is worth noting. Now, I will say that over half of those numbers happened in September of 2022. And in October of 2022, the number of processing went down significantly. My question to you, Charlie, is why do you think there was so much processing in September of 2022? And do you think the State Department is going to continue that trend in 2023 or not?
Well, the State Department's goal is to return to pre-COVID levels of processing, and they want to get back to normal as quickly as possible. And my guess is the reason that there were so many cases processed for China during the month of September is kind of a combination of issues. One, they may have had additional staff to be able to process the cases in September as they returned to normal processing levels. Also, many of the cases were already at post, at Guangzhou, ready to be processed. They may have required updated medicals or some type of security clearance, and it may have taken until September for many of those things to be received. And therefore, in an attempt to maximize number use, which again is their goal, they were able to process many more cases during the month of September.
That makes sense. Can you tell me what these percentages over here on the right side of the slide mean, and maybe just take us, and I know we've kind of gone over this a little bit, but how the per country and the unused visa numbers would be allocated, and why the China's use of the EB-5 numbers has decreased recently?
Sure. As stated earlier, the Immigration and Nationality Act imposes a 7% per country limit on the use of numbers. That's an overall on the employment categories and each individual category. So China, India, Brazil, any country using EB-5 numbers would be subject to that 7% limit. In the early years, for example, in the 2014-15, China was the main participant and user of EB-5 numbers. They were pretty much at the beginning of the program with applicants filing. Therefore, they were maximizing number use. Because again, if there are, quote, otherwise unused numbers under the overall annual limit, those numbers can be made available without regard to per country limit. Therefore, many, many more Chinese applicants were able to be processed. Beginning in about 2016, more applicants from other countries began to take advantage of the EB-5 program. There were many more filings. And some from about 2016 on, the amount of, quote, otherwise unused numbers declined, but China was still benefiting by large amounts of numbers. So they were using, even in 2019, 45% of the entire EB-5 annual limit. So they received a very good benefit. And this is the type of scenario I would expect to see during fiscal 2023. I believe that China will use a very large percentage of the unreserved numbers.
And again, that's because those otherwise unused numbers can be used based on priority date, right?
They're made strictly in priority date order. The availability of unused fiscal 2022 carryover numbers will increase the unreserved annual limit, and therefore there'll be many more numbers available, again, to be made available in priority date order. The Chinese applicants typically have the earliest EB-5 final act or priority dates.
I know we didn't really discuss this going through, but I just have a question for you. Why do you think it is, we're starting to see more EB-5 interviews for immigrant visas. My question to you is, why do you think it's taking so long to schedule those interviews at this time?
The scheduling...
Once they become documentary qualified, I should say, you know, once you've kind of gone through NVC and given the Department of State all of that information.
Right. Assuming the case is going to be processed overseas, the overseas posts have processing capacity at the various embassies and consulates, and therefore cases sometimes, not all the eligible cases can be scheduled. Typically, for example, if the case could not be scheduled, was eligible but could not be scheduled, for example, the month of February, every attempt would be to schedule it then for the month of March. Because the State Department knows the inconvenience and the potential hardships that can be imposed on the applicants, and their goal is to finalize action on these cases as quickly as possible. It may not seem like that, but by being able to process a case, it saves them time for having to answer inquiries, etc. And I know that when I left the State Department, their goal was to recover from the impact of COVID post-closures as quickly as possible and try to get back to normal by recovering from the backlog that developed during those times?
Well, I've done more EB-5 immigrant visa prep sessions in the past few months than I had in the previous few years. And so it's definitely good to see things are kind of getting back to normal and more of these visa numbers being used. Okay, so we're going to go to our last slide. And for those of you who waited long enough and have stayed on, you're going to get a nice piece of information from Charlie that we all have come to learn and love from him when he gives these speeches. So this here is the NVC waiting list. And you know, every year, the Department of State releases this. It says this is pretty much the number of folks who are documentary qualified waiting for a visa appointment. And as you can see, it kind of went up in 2021 and then it's gone back down by November of 2022. My question to you, Charlie, is what can you glean from this information? And do you have any predictions or projections about what we may see in the future?
Sure. You asked earlier why China has a very early date. This chart shows with over 38,000, almost 39,000 applicants on the National Visa Center waiting list versus the per country limit. That shows why there is a date there. Also, the high India limit of 1,362 again indicates why they are subject to a date. And again, when you're looking at these numbers, these represent the amount of cases that were on file at the National Visa Center as of November 1st, 2022. These numbers will be constantly changing as some of these applicants are scheduled for interview and receive visas, but then new petitions are received from the Immigration Service. And there are large amounts of applicants that may be processed in the United States for adjustment of status. So these would be the minimum totals. But I think the very important thing to gain from looking at this is the Vietnam total. I think this total of 1,534 guarantees that there will be a Vietnam unreserved final action date imposed in the coming months, possibly as early as May. But I, based again on this, I think there will definitely be a Vietnam unreserved final action date imposed and remain in effect probably through the end of fiscal 2023.
And do you have any idea of what that date might be?
Not without being able to have information on the priority dates of the various applicants. So without that visibility, I would not know. My guess is that it would be hopefully maybe in sometime in 2021. But again, I think it would be unreasonable to speculate on a date at this point without having access to the demand. Sure. And being able to see the priority dates. But I think suffice it to say, there will be a date, and I would watch and see if the State Department imposes an application filing date for Vietnam. If they do so, that would kind of indicate where they believe the final action date is going to be.
Got it. So you heard it here first, folks. Look out for a final action date for unreserved Vietnam in the coming months. I guess my question to you, Charlie, is when would the Department of State determine, I know you say as early as possible, but those carryover for unreserved, if they make that determination earlier on in the fiscal year, would you say it would mean that a final action date would be less likely to be imposed because there's more visas available?
No, not okay. For Vietnam. And those carryover numbers will benefit China. The use of reserved fiscal 2022 carryover numbers will primarily benefit China because they have the earliest dates. They are unlikely to benefit applicants from India who are currently subject to a final action date, and those from Vietnam, which will eventually become subject to a final action date. But again, I would make that determination in terms of the availability of unreserved numbers as early as possible, because it maximized number use. When I was responsible for doing so, I would often make those type of estimates on other employment categories as early as the setting of the October dates so that I could spread them out over the entire course of the year. Then I would monitor the situation and see if they needed to be any change in terms of my estimate of how many otherwise unused numbers might be available.
And is there anything that you've seen publicly released that would indicate that that's what the Department of State would be doing now or already has done?
I would say that they have not done so already, because if any of those unreserved numbers are going to be available, that would also increase the per country limit. And right now, since India, the final action date retrogressed, my guess is that they are using the original 666 per country limit. I believe that when the carryover numbers are added to the unreserved, it will increase that annual per country limit to approximately 975 numbers, which will allow potentially the forward movement of the India final action date later, and would lessen the need for an early Vietnam date. But again, the fact that they retrogressed India already, I don't think they've started rolling over those numbers.
That makes sense to me. Well, I hope that the Department of State is watching this on YouTube. Please listen to Charlie. He knows what he's talking about. And I know this was a very deep dive today. I thank you all for joining us. If you have questions about this, feel free to reach out to us. My email is jbarnett@wolfstorff.com. You can always reach out. Here's all of our contact information. You can check us out on YouTube. We have Chatting with Charlie's every month. We'll probably be doing it again next month as well. Hopefully we'll have some better information from Table 5 at that point. But I don't see any questions here. I don't see any questions. So with that, I thank you very much for joining, Charlie. Thank you for your expertise and insight. And I hope you all have a great afternoon. Thank you so much.
Thank you for listening to the WR Immigration Podcast. We hope you found this enjoyable. If you have further questions, please reach out to us at visalaw@wolfstorff.com.